is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, find the shooting machine that meets your team's exact training needs this holiday season with Dr. Dish Basketball's December end-of-year super sale. Shop now until December 29th to unlock their biggest deal ever. Buy one Dr. Dish, get one free. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Dominic Amorosa, head boys basketball coach at Strake Jesuit College Prep in Houston, Texas, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And in the spirit of the holiday season, we thought
ho ho ho.
Oh, look at that. Coach Jason has his goofy Santa hat on, so kudos to him for being prepared. But we thought we would do an NBA naughty and nice list and play a little Santa Claus. So, Jay, I think you're going to kick things off since we were kind of batting around ideas and you came up with this one. So lead us off here.
I'm going to start with the naughty list, and it's not what I think you're going to think now, Mike. I'm changing it.
All right.
I'm changing it. I'm going to put this person is going on the naughty list. It's JB Bickerstaff, Mike. I'm putting him on it. I'm putting him on the naughty list, Mike. And here's why. Because he has no clue on how to do rotations. We've got injuries of guys who are maybe a little hurt and then all of a sudden magically have major. Now, Garland I can get. I understand. I get. Okay, because he broke his jaw. They didn't know. Like, he kept playing in that game, right? When he fractured his jaw,
well, nobody
he
didn't knew about sit. It until the next day. So,
I'm saying, so he played through it, okay. But the Mobley thing was very seemed a little bit sketchy because he was like he all of a sudden needs to get surgery. Like it took them 2 weeks almost to figure that out. Like he sat out all those games on the trip, right?
Yeah, well,
he set out the Miami game.
In defense of JB Bickerstaff, he's also not a doctor.
Well, I understand. Here's my problem, though, Mike. My problem is it's seemingly like – and I know you can only play the guys that you're playing with, but I just don't understand these rotations. I don't love the way that he just complained. I've never really noticed it too much, but he spends more time complaining about officials than coaching his team.
Oh, he spends way too much time. That's been my biggest pet peeve with him from the very beginning is you see him on the sideline and 90% of it is him making faces and complaining about calls.
Yeah, 100%. He's always just complaining, yada, yada, yada. Dude, just coach your team up. Stop whining about the calls. And get your team prepared to try and win the game. Listen, more power to them. They're 2-0 since they found out these two injuries. But I'm kind of over it. Something has to happen. Something has to change. And I don't know what that change is going to be. Oh, Mike, we have a special guest. Look who's joined us. My
Rory,
dog.
What's up, Rory? How you doing, buddy?
I'm feeling better. She's feeling better.
She's feeling better. She looks good. Looks solid.
She's ready. Yeah, she came downstairs. So that's a step in the right direction. So
nice. There you
right,
go.
Sorry. Go ahead. Just had to acknowledge her. All right. Go on. Anyways, I just think something has to happen. Now, I'm not saying fire JB Bickerstaff, but figure it out, dude. Like, Listen, Sam Merrill, how has he not gotten any run? Like, our biggest complaint a few weeks ago was that they're not getting guys who catching up, shoot threes. That guy's been on fire since they started putting him in the rotation. I know maybe, like, it's probably lightning in a bottle a little bit, because, but take that to your advantage. Like, I was so happy when they put him out in the overtime yesterday and that guy just lit it up. Like, Craig Porter Jr.,
Where'd he go, by the way?
He played a little bit yesterday, but like, what's going on there? Like, he cooked for like three straight games, and then all of a sudden,
gone.
Donovan Mitchell's back, so now he's gone. He's like, poof, like disappeared. I just don't understand it, Mike. And once again, maybe we need to put. I got to be careful here because he's an Olmsted Falls alumni, but I got to be like. Something has to give for the depth out of our big guy situation now, because Jared Allen has looked better since Mobley hasn't played. Do you agree with that statement? He looks better that Mobley's not since that Mobley's not playing.
When one or the other is not out there, there is more space on the floor for the one who is on the floor to be able to operate. And there's just more spacing in the offense when you don't have both of those guys on the floor, which goes back to what we've talked about numerous times here over the last month. And even going back to last season, you start looking at it and we talked about the redundancy, and it just feels like their four main guys are all really good players. They're all four guys that any team would want to have. But it does feel like the Mitchell Garland, the Mobley Allen, those two pairings just don't make sense. And from a standpoint that it doesn't feel like either one of those pairings where one or both guys amplify the other. It almost feels like you're getting a lessened version of each of the four of those guys when they're on the floor with their compadre. And I don't know what you do. I mean, I don't know if that's Bickerstaff. I don't know if that's just you got to straight make a change in personnel. You and I have heard numerous national media. I think you might even have one person on your potential naughty list. But
Bill Simmons, come on. Think about better trades than what you came up with on your podcast. I'm disappointed in you. And I love Bill Simmons. I want to be clear here. I love that guy. I love, love, love his podcast. But come on, RJ Barrett is your best you can come up with? Tyler Hero?
Get out of here. If the Cavs deal Donovan Mitchell, right, the same way that the Utah Jazz dealt Donovan Mitchell. So when the Cavs traded with the Jazz got back Lauri Markkanen, who was not the Lauri Markkanen that we see in the league today, and they got back Colin Sexton, and I guess you got back Agbaji, who was at that point a completely unknown, unproven guy. But you got two guys who were rotation players on an NBA team, but certainly nobody thought of Colin Sexton or Lauri Markkanen as major, huge pieces that were going to be the cornerstones of your franchise. So in that sense, I guess you could look at it and write and say, if you're getting Tyler Hero from the Miami Heat, Tyler Hero probably has been established more at this point than Markkanen. RJ Barrett is probably, I don't know, is he on the same level as Markkanen was? He's probably maybe a little bit better than Markkanen was considered. Yeah. Do you think? I don't know. I mean, and then who else are you going to throw in there? So maybe each of those teams throw in a couple role players, and then how many draft picks do you get out of it? Do you get two first-round picks? Do you get three first-round picks? Where are those picks coming from? In other words, what teams? Because especially we're talking about Brooklyn. Brooklyn doesn't have their own picks. The Knicks could potentially trade you some Mavericks picks, and the Heat, I don't know if they have their own picks or who they have, but it's just to try to track what the protections are on all those picks and where they're coming from. I don't think you're getting a much better player as the centerpiece of that trade than RJ Barrett or Tyler Hero. Now, look, I could sit here and say, that if you're the Cavs, you don't do that trade, but you're probably not getting equal star value back for Donovan Mitchell. Yeah. Now, potentially, I guess you could, if there's a bidding war, you could potentially get somebody who jumps in that maybe you're not thinking about right now, but I think you're more likely to get players on that RJ Barrett, Tyler Hero. What you could say about those two guys, at least, is that they're young, or at least theoretically young, and sort of fit the Garland Mobley timeline, which is basically where you're resetting your team if you're the Cavs. I just don't think, look, I pitched, I think, the Donovan Mitchell trade scenario. I was pretty early on that this season, that I thought maybe they should consider trading Donovan Mitchell. And yet at the same time, I think if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers, can you really go through one playoff run with this team after you traded for Mitchell and traded away everything that you did and just say, we're not going to wait 2 months for potentially Mobley and Darius Garland to get back and see what we have with this group? It seems unlikely that just because these two guys got hurt that all of a sudden between now and February that they're going to trade them. I'm not saying they won't. I'm not saying it's not the right call, but it seems, it seems unlikely. I know you've been saying that you think if it happens that it's going to happen in the summer. And I guess I was more week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago before these injuries, I guess I was more leaning towards maybe they're going to get rid of them before the deadline if things don't turn around. I mean, if this team continues to kind of flounder at 500, maybe you start looking at it and saying, hey, we got to make a change.
See, to me, I think that I almost think now you can't trade him, because if you want a chance to be in that playoff situation, even like, I don't know, the trade deadline is after the All-Star break or before the All-Star? It's before the All-Star break. When is it? Do you know the answer to that question?
I think it's before the All-Star break, I believe.
So, like, I think you have to run this team out and play the way that you're going to play, and then make the decision in the offseason. Because the other thing you can think about, maybe, like, I'm not saying – that's not like Garland and Mobley need fresh legs and whatnot, but, you know, they're going to come back and they're going to be – Garland's at least – he's at least going to be cardioed. Like, he's got a broken jaw. It's not like he's not sitting, like, doing anything. He's going to be able to do everything non-contact. He's going to be able to shoot. He's going to be able to do everything. He's just not going to be able to get contact. Mobley is in a different situation, but like when those guys come back, you theoretically think like they're going to be ready to go. Like, and the Cavs, I mean, looking at their stretch, I mean, the fact that they won the last two games, and I know the Hawks aren't an amazing team or a super team, and I know, but they're both, the Hawks and the Rockets are over 500, and they were successful in beating them. So it's not like we can't compete. Obviously when we play a team like Milwaukee or Boston, we're going to struggle right now. But I mean, there's no way that I can say they can't compete for a five or a six spot without those two guys right now. Right. Cause the East is just weak. Like, it's just not super strong after you get those top three teams, like Indiana, who was in play-in tournament championship. They've floundered since that's ended. Same with the Lakers. They've struggled since that's ended. They like used all their energy. The Lakers, I think, are 1-2 since the in-season tournament. And I feel like Indiana's almost in the same situation.
Are you putting the in-season tournament on the naughty list?
No. I enjoyed the in-season tournament.
Pacers have lost four in a row.
Including that game or including that game?
I don't think that includes that game, because that game did not count in the regular season standings, so it did not include that game. So they've lost four in a row since.
They've played four games since last Saturday, or from Saturday. Wow, I guess that makes sense. Yeah. The in season tournament was
here. I'm gonna pull up their schedule.
That was 10 days ago. Yeah, I guess the four games. So they've lost
to the Bucks, Wizards, Timberwolves, and Clippers. So three out of those four are pretty good teams at this point. But still.
Yes. But the bottom line is this, Mike. Like, they've lost four in a row. The Cavs are in the sixth seed now, you know, pending results tonight. And by the way, you've closed the gap in our NBA totals, Mike. You've gone from down 20 to 14. So there you go.
Nice. Look, I think the bottom line is that, to me, rather than these injuries accelerating the timeline to trade Donovan Mitchell, I feel like it's decelerated the timeline to trade him. Because
100% agree.
I just don't see where you're giving up on this team after basically one season and 20 games. Like, to me, to punt on the whole experiment and say we gave up 5 years worth of our drafts to have Donovan Mitchell in the house for 1 year, and then we're going to trade him out for who knows what. I mean, I guess if you can get what you consider to be a great package, fine. But I don't know what's going to be out there that is really going to make sense. I don't know that what's out there is going to move the needle. I still think that the Garland Mitchell backcourt leading you to a championship with those two guys at that size, I just don't think that that's doable. I don't think it's going to happen. No matter what you put else, no matter how good Mobley gets, I just think two little guards, as good as those two guys are, I don't think that works. So maybe you just say, hey, you try to get ship Mitchell out. You get back what you can in terms of another guy who maybe could be not at the same level as Mitchell from a stardom standpoint, but maybe just a guy who fits better and accentuates what Garland and Mobley can do. And then you rebuild your draft and you have some more draft equity that you can then utilize going forward. So you at least have the opportunity to add somebody to this mix in some way other than through trades. And we know we're not getting anybody huge in free agency. We got Strus, so I think it's worked out pretty well. But look, to me, it doesn't make sense to give up on this group this soon. I don't think the Cavs organization will do that. I'm not saying it would be the complete wrong move to do it. I just don't see any organization, and particularly the Cavs, just punting on this whole thing after what they gave up after 1 year and 20 games because two guys happened to get hurt. To me, it decelerates the process.
Here's the other thing, Mike, that I want to just point out. You know, say Garland doesn't come back till like the last week of January, right? Okay. The schedule in January, other than three games against Milwaukee and one game against, I don't remember, I just looked through it, is so light. We play Detroit three times. We play San Antonio. We play Chicago. We play Atlanta. Like, those games without Garland and Mobley are winnable games, right? Like, so we play, I mean, playing Detroit three times, they might have lost 50 games in a row by then. I don't know. Like, seriously.
Who knows what's going on there?
Honestly, the Cavs are not in a place where they're going to say, let's punt on the season completely, okay? They're just not in that position because they're still going to be competitive in the East. Now, if we were in the West, Mike, and we were trying to fight for a spot, then we might have to have that conversation because the West is just stacked. I mean, Phoenix is in the 10th seed right now at 14-12. We are 15-12 when we are in the sixth seed. Like, then we might have to have that conversation. But we're not there. We're in the East. So, you know, I just think they're not going to trade Donovan right now. So Bill Simmons, JB Bickerstaff, we've been going 17 minutes and we're still on my first naughty list. So I think it's time to move on to one of yours.
All right. So let's take the opposite track here. Let's go nice. Let's go with another Utah Jazz trade that a year ago at this time, most people were aghast at the Timberwolves acquiring Rudy Gobert and everything that they gave up for him. And I think you can still be aghast at what they gave up for him because I'm not sure who were the other bidders and suitors of Rudy Gobert. But what you cannot argue with is that Minnesota has arguably played the best basketball in the league over the course of these first 25 games. And defensively, when you look at what Minnesota has and what they can do. So let's start with obviously Gobert, who is a four-time defensive player of the year, a guy who is 7'4", a guy who is huge, a guy who is a deterrent at the rim and who has consistently been one of the best, if not the best, defenders in the league for the last 6 or 7 years. Start with him. Then you go out onto the perimeter and you look at Jaden McDaniels and you look at Anthony Edwards, and you just have two guys who are big, long, thick, physical, can move. And basically those two guys, I would say McDaniels is usually more locked in than Anthony Edwards, who tends to lock in a little bit more in big moments. But over the course of a game, those two guys, you can throw them on any two wing players on any other team. You're talking about two guards, threes, fours, ones, and the two best perimeter players on the other team. You can put two incredible defenders on those guys. And then you have Towns, who hasn't been historically a very good defensive player, but Towns is 7 foot tall with long arms. And just if you can get him into the right position, which watching what limited Timberwolves basketball I've been able to watch this season, you do see him, I think, giving more of an effort and just being, if you can just get him to be in the right spot, they're just incredibly hard to score against. So you start there, and then you take what Anthony Edwards has become, a guy who, although he may not be a top five player in the league at this point, I think believes that he's a top five player in the league. And part of it is just having that mentality. And I think the important part is that he's kind of taken over the alpha dog role from Towns on this team. And so when you look at Minnesota and you look at what they've done defensively, and then you look at what they can do offensively because of Edwards' ability to score in isolation and because of Towns' ability to spread the floor, shoot from three, but also be able to post up when necessary. And then I think the question was, and it was really hard to answer last year because Towns got hurt and he missed what I think 55 or 60 games, somewhere in that range. And so they never really got to figure out what it looked like with Gobert and Towns together. And Gobert really never hit his stride defensively, where there was a lot of talk last year that maybe he had slipped.
Didn't Towns' mom pass away last year too, Mike? Is that accurate? Yeah, Am I misremembering that?
At some point she had, I know she passed away from COVID, if I'm not mistaken. And so they're just, look, Towns has always been kind of a goofball and a guy who, when you look at his talent, has never really sort of stepped up into that role. And to him being the number two guy behind Edwards, where it's clearly become Edwards' team, I think that's the right spot for Karl Anthony Towns. And of course, in the offseason, there was a lot of speculation, where is Towns going to go? Is Towns going to get traded? And at this point, you're not trading him anywhere. Now, Minnesota has some financial situations that they have coming up because they signed McDaniels to that huge extension in the offseason for, like, I think $135 million or something over 4 years. And Towns already has his extension that kicked in, and Edwards is going to kick in soon. And obviously we know Gobert is making a ton of money. So this team's going to get really expensive really fast. But for this season, I don't think you can do anything but say that Minnesota and the way they've played and what their prospects are. I mean, to me, they're a team that, even though they're young and even though they're relatively inexperienced as a group, when you start looking at who they're going to have to play, I think Minnesota can be a team that, I'm not saying they're going to go to the NBA Finals because I don't think they are, but they're certainly a team that could make it to the Western Conference Finals, which is more than I think anybody would have thought coming into the season. I think people thought maybe they could crack the top six, but man, they've far exceeded that. And there's a decent chance that they could be the number one seed when all is said and done. And if you're the number one seed, you got a chance to get to the finals. I don't think it'll happen, but who knows?
Yeah, we'll have to see. We will have to see. All right. Let's see. I think my next naughty – I'm going to stay naughty, Mike. I don't know why.
Right. Okay.
I'm wearing the Santa hat. It has to be Draymond, right? Like, it has to be Draymond. Listen, this guy, what a clown. Now, listen,
I understand.
Yeah, and I'm going to lump someone else into this, Mike. I'm going to lump Steve Kerr into this a little
Absolutely.
Bit.
Absolutely. No question. No
because,
question.
Because he has been such – he has facilitated this in a sense. He has not done anything to stop it in a sense. He has kind of just let things go. And I have a lot of respect for Steve Kerr. I want to be clear before I say this. Like, I think he's a great coach, and I think that – he makes a lot of great common sense statements. He makes a lot of great – he's done a pretty good job. But the whole handling of the Draymond thing since the last few years – like obviously Draymond's always been a loose cannon, but it has been heightened in the last few years in my opinion. And he's kind of said like when Draymond punched – smacked on when we were recording the podcast last week, and he smacked Nurkic in the face. And then after the game, Kerr has the audacity, "I haven't seen the film yet." Are you kidding me? There is no way that you showed up on that podium, Steve Kerr, and hadn't watched it. There's zero chance that when they were showing it on the Jumbotron the 5,000 times while it was under review that you did not watch it. I don't believe you, and I'm disappointed in you for not owning up to it. So, Steve Kerr, you are also on the naughty list. Draymond Green, you're on the naughty list. I understand you have mental health issues, probably of some sort, right? Like, it has to be. You've got stuff going on. You need to figure it out. And the fact that the league is going to say, oh, like I've read some reports that he's going to be out for 3 weeks. If you really think that 3 weeks of counseling is going to fix his demeanor and behavior on the basketball floor, you crazy. It's not. It's not going to do it. It hasn't changed. He said it himself like a year or two ago. I'm not going to stop being me. I'm not going to stop being me. He's hurting himself now. He's hurting himself as a potential broadcaster in the future because he's going to be a stain. His reputation is going to be a stain. And I understand that Rasheed Wallace had similar issues. But Rasheed Wallace didn't have the aspirations to be a broadcaster that Draymond Green has. And I mind you, I've liked Draymond on the NBA pregame show. I've actually enjoyed him because he'll say it. He gives a current player's perspective, and I think he does a pretty good job. But he's ruining it because of his on-court behavior and antics. He needs to figure it out. Off my soapbox. Mike, go ahead.
The question with Draymond becomes, at what point does I'm going to continue to be me? What does that mean? Like, I can act like an idiot, but it's okay because I'm going to continue to be me? And I think roping Steve Kerr into this was exactly the right way to do it because – when you look at the things that Draymond has done over the years and then the way that Kerr and the Warriors organization has made excuses for him. And look, it's obvious that coaching Draymond Green, and I think there's been times over the course of this run that Kerr has said in some way, shape, or form that coaching Draymond is difficult because he oftentimes is walking right up and over the line. But at a certain point, to me, you owe it to that guy and you owe it to your team and to your franchise to help the guy to be just a better functioning person, a better functioning team member, a guy who's not going to hurt his team. And you think about 2016. And the LeBron nut punch and the kick to Steven Adams in the groin and all the things that led up to him being suspended that season. And then you look at they're coming off a championship in 2022, which when you look back on that, that championship, I think historically is going to play out. It already seems weird to me that the Golden State Warriors won the 2022 NBA championship, but they did. And coming off that, you have the Jordan Poole punch in training camp that gets leaked, that you can make a pretty good argument that that situation sabotaged whatever opportunity the Warriors had to make a run to defend their championship in 2023. Now, I don't think it would have happened because, like I said, I feel like the 2022 championship was a strange one. But the fact remains is that Draymond was at the center of that controversy kicking off their title defense. And it just feels like, as you said, his behavior has become increasingly erratic. In the past, I would have said that he was a guy maybe who, if he was on your team, you would love him. And if he's not on your team, you would hate him. And at this point...
And that was before he punched Jordan Poole, by
right,
the way.
At this point, the shenanigans, the yelling, the just... He's a guy who, when you look at every other level of sports, he would be a guy that would be termed a cancer, a bad guy, a bad teammate. When you're talking about, and I know they're in the NBA, I know they're professionals, I know they're grown men, I know it's different. But when you look at what we talk about all the time on the podcast of what it takes to be a good teammate and build the right kind of culture, man, it's hard to look at the behavior that Draymond has exhibited over the years and feel like this is a guy who's a culture guy, who's a team first guy, a guy who puts the team above himself. It just doesn't look that way. It's never looked that way. And I don't get it. And then I guess the last thing I'll leave with this is when you look at and you watch Warriors games and you see the things that Draymond gets away with in terms of yelling at officials and going
and
at
and then Jokic
guys.
Just one and, thing and he gets yeah, ejected.
Right. I mean, the Jokic technical,
which
where
happened last week.
He says MF-er and he gets ejected. And then you can watch Draymond. I mean, you could probably pull up 50 examples of this, of him just literally jawing at officials for 30 seconds after a call and running around on the court while he's doing it. And nothing. I mean, there's been such a double standard set for this guy for whatever reason. And he's been enabled. He's taken advantage of it. And at some point, you just keep letting him get away with stuff. And I feel like he's fallen off the deep end. So he definitely belongs on the naughty list. And if he comes back in 3 weeks, he's going to be gone again pretty shortly after that is all I'll say.
Okay, he did break his tweet silence tonight, Mike. He hadn't tweeted since the tough Ja.
All right.
Two peas in a pod, him and Ja Morant. I'm going to put him on my nice list really quickly, Mike, and only because he came back. This might be an abbreviated nice list. He came back tonight. It's hilarious. I want you to know. They will come up with a stat for anything. The stat tonight, Ja Morant scores the most points in his someone who's missed the last 25 games in NBA history. That's literally it was a stat.
Nice. How many did he end up with? How many did he end up with tonight before he hit the game
34.
Winner?
34, right. And then he hit the game winner tonight. So this is a temporary nice list. Welcome back, Ja Morant. Don't do anything stupid. As Worldwide Wob tweeted, stay off Instagram for one night. Stay off for Instagram one night. ...
Look.
There you go, Mike.
I mean, what's interesting is they were down like 25 to the Pelicans in the first half and somehow fought their way back. So, look, is he going to make a difference in the Grizzlies season? Absolutely. Absolutely. Can they crawl their way back into the play-in?
They're now 7-20-something, right?
Hard to believe just because the quality of the teams in the West. I mean, I think you'd have to have somebody fall off, and it doesn't really seem like – anybody above them is a tremendous candidate. That's not to say that teams couldn't fall off, but it doesn't feel like the teams above them in the standings, barring injury, are likely to fall. And that includes the Warriors at number 11, if you're just saying, hey, they're not going to make it. So the Grizzlies have
they're 7-19, Mike, okay?
Yeah.
That's what they are, okay? So they're 7-19. They probably have to get to 45 wins. So that would mean the rest of the way. And so I've played 26 games, and that means they have 56 games left. Like, they have to basically go 40 and
16 the rest of the way.
That's gonna be tough sledding. Yeah, I don't see that happening. I don't see it happening. But for one night, Ja, welcome to the nice list. We'll see how it goes moving on from here.
Next week, we'll probably might be doing a podcast and you're putting you back on the New Year's Revolution. Ja Morant, take away social media or something like that. I don't know.
Let's hope that he is moving towards the straight and narrow. All right. So I don't even know where to put this. Uh-oh. It could go on either list. This could go on list. Where do you think I'm going? Where do you think I'm going?
I don't have any clue whatsoever. Okay. Go ahead.
So I'm going to the Philadelphia 76ers. And I'm going to the fact that they have currently the best point differential in the league. And I don't know if you saw or heard the Joel Embiid stats from this past week. Did you hear anything about this?
Mike, I'm going to be completely transparent with you. I'm with the dog situation that I was dealing with. I was out on everything, but I missed two Cavs games this week for the first time all.
Okay.
You know, so season. So
let me just lay this out for you. So prior to last night's loss to the Chicago Bulls, not exactly an NBA juggernaut, but prior to that, the 76ers' last six games had been against, get ready, the Wizards, the Hawks, the Wizards, the Pistons, and the Hornets. So in the previous four games, so that includes two against the Pistons, one against the Hornets, and one against the Wizards, Joel Embiid averaged 38 points a game, 14 rebounds, and I believe 6 or 7 assists, and did not play in a fourth quarter in any of those games. Pretty impressive.
That's pretty
good. Even against the dregs of the league, that's pretty impressive. And I've heard a number of podcasts over the last few days, and I have read a number of articles over the last couple of days that have insisted to me that the Philadelphia 76ers are a legitimate championship contending team. So here's what my conundrum is for putting them. Are they on the nice list or are they on the naughty list? So if they're on the nice list, you can say, wow, what Embiid's doing. He's averaging like 34 a game, 14 rebounds. He's scoring on a clip that we haven't seen in a long time. I think Harden was the last guy to get to the numbers that Embiid has had, at least over the course of a full season. And yet I have very, 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 very little faith that the Joel Embiid we're seeing in December beat up the Pistons, Wizards, and Hornets is the Joel Embiid that we are going to see in the playoffs against Milwaukee or Boston or the Knicks or the Cavs or the Heat or whoever it is that the Sixers are going to face in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And so I go back and forth where I think Philly is better because Tyrese Maxey is clearly a better number two than James Harden when it comes to playoff basketball, but you still have the same number one guy. And I think where I'm at with Embiid is the same place that I may have been with Harden 3 or 4 years ago, where I don't buy it. I'm not buying it until I see him healthy and at his best in the playoffs, carrying a team, playing 44 minutes when necessary. I'm just not going to buy it. So for that reason, I think Philly is on the naughty list because I feel like they're fraudulent title contenders. And yet at the same time, they are off to a very nice start.
Would you say they are somewhat equivalent to the resident Cleveland Browns, who are fraudulent number one seed contenders?
Well, the Browns as a franchise maybe could – well, no, they can't be considered Joel Embiid because they have never had – anywhere near the type of regular season success that Joel Embiid has enjoyed. The Browns have not been the MVP of a regular season, maybe ever in my lifetime. So okay. All right. I can't equate that. You know what I'm saying. So Are the Browns a fraudulent number one seed? I don't know. In the NFL, dude, you see so many things that don't make sense on a week-to-week basis, and you have such a roller coaster that I mean, we can save this for the end, but if you told me that this Browns defense could win a Super Bowl, I could believe it. I could believe it. Now, is the offense functional enough to do that? I would highly, highly, highly doubt it.
Listen, but Flacco, baby.
I don't know. Joel Embiid is not going to come through in the playoffs. I'll believe it when I see it. So naughty and nice for Philly. Nice.
Do you have more confidence in Joel Embiid or Myles Garrett to come through? I have more confidence in Myles Garrett, and he's only played in one playoff game. There's what I'm going to say.
I have more confidence in Myles Garrett. I would agree. We're kind of comparing apples and oranges there, but it's fine.
Listen. Anytime I can work the Browns magic in and Flacco, for Flacco, we're going to do it.
All right. It's fair.
All right.
Give me your next thing.
I'm staying naughty, Mike.
All right.
NBA, the whole NBA, I'm putting you on the naughty list for this Christmas Day slate. I think this has got to be the worst Christmas Day slate, in my opinion, in a long time. Let me read it off to you, Mike.
I've read this before. Me and Meredith were looking at it because we were trying to determine what we're going to be doing at our relatives and whether or not we were going to be able to get an NBA game on the TV over what the NFL has to offer on Christmas Day.
Because the NFL is playing three games on Christmas Day. Ho, 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 NBA. Good luck competing. All right. That's what I'm going to say. Bucks at Knicks. I could care less. Okay. We know,
I'm out on that game. Nah, I'm not interested.
Yeah, the Warriors at Nuggets. The only reason to watch this is Jokic, and it's not even enough for me to watch it at 2:30 on Christmas Day. Okay, Celtics Lakers.
That's at least a mildly interesting game. That's mildly.
What is Warriors Nuggets or Celtics Lakers?
Warriors Nuggets, just because the history of the Warriors.
Listen, there's no way the Warriors are competing. Get out of here. No.
Okay. All right.
Celtics not Lakers is the only game on this slate that I have any interest in, and there's no chance in hell I'm watching it because I'm going to be at my sister-in-law's.
I just don't want to watch the Celtics. I don't want to watch the Celtics. I don't like the Celtics. I don't want to watch the Celtics.
I know, but this is the best game of the slate, Mike. The next game. Sixers at Heat. Who in Miami is going to this game? Please tell me. NBA, you can't get people to go to the game in Miami on a Saturday night. You think they're going to show up or Friday night? You think they're going to show up on Christmas Day? Listen, the only stadium that's going to have less people in it is the Carolina Panthers stadium. Did you see that picture, by the way?
Yeah, that was good.
Okay.
That was good.
That game is mildly interesting because of the Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler relationship, but I don't know. I'm not interested in that game.
It's not must see TV.
Not must see TV. And then the last game of the night is the Mavericks and Suns. I'm not really I like Luka. Okay. Is Kyrie back? Kyrie's not back, right? He's not back.
I don't think so. He hasn't been playing yet. So.
And then the Suns still haven't been healthy. I'm not super interested. Listen, NBA, this is not hard. Let me give you a little hint here. I understand NBA that you want to hit them big markets. But I don't understand why it's too difficult to think. Let's pick the five best playoff series from last year and put that on Christmas Day. Like honestly. This is not too complicated. The Milwaukee Bucks Knicks. This game is a better game if it's Milwaukee Boston. That is a better Christmas Day game. True or false,
Mike? Then you're killing your best game.
What do you mean?
You're killing your Celtics Lakers game.
No, you put the Lakers against the Nuggets. Come on, give me. I think in Christmas Day games, Eastern Conference teams should play Eastern Conference teams. Western Conference teams should play Western Conference teams. Done.
get rivalry
games. Here's the games I want.
Clippers Lakers. Listen, if you put the Bucks against the Celtics and the Clippers against the Lakers, there's two good games. Okay? There's two good games. Then the Maverick Suns is an okay game in that case. Because right now the Maverick Suns, in my opinion, is the second best game. Now the Maverick Suns is the third best game. Okay? Then how about this one? Then you go Sixers, there's no Oklahoma City Thunder in here, I understand. There's no Minnesota Timberwolves, and I understand no one could have imagined. How about Oklahoma City Timberwolves? Let's flex the heck out of the Christmas Day games. Hey, the NFL can do it. Let's do it in the NBA, Mike. Come on. Leave it to you can do this. If you could do this for the in-season tournaments, let's do this for Christmas Day. Let's not make the Christmas Day games obsolete. On December 1st, you announce the Christmas Day games. You make a whole spectacle of it. You have a production company. You go, these are the five games that we have selected to put on this date. You allot the games. You leave the games around Christmas. Hell, Mike, even better. You make this announcement before the in-season tournament championship game. NBA, I'm solving your problems for you. The day of the NBA in-season tournament, you have a 30-minute pregame show. You announce the Christmas Day games. It's an Eastern Conference versus Eastern Conference games, Western Conference versus Western Conference games. Then you keep the days December 26th, 27th, and 28th open. And whatever teams don't get selected there, you spot the other teams in those 3 days after Christmas or the 2 days after Christmas. And you just figure out the situations. And that way, the whole reason the in-season tournament worked was because the Eastern Conference teams played Eastern Conference teams in those games that were not designated as in-season tournament games. They were left open for interpretation for different combinations. It's problem solved, Mike. You've already figured it out. You know what teams need other games. You can figure that out. One game, everyone plays one of those days. You play the 25th, the 26th, or the 27th. Okay. The NBA can figure it out that way. Then we don't get stuck with these games that aren't good anymore. Like, these are not good games, and you can have fun with it. And I think that's the way to go. I don't know. I just came up with that off the top of my head, but I think that's the way to fix it. 100%. If the NFL can flex games from Sunday night to Monday night in a sport that's way more taxing on their players than the NBA, and I understand the NFL is a way bigger operation than the NBA still. And it's a bigger multi-billion company. But if the NFL can do that and flex games out from Monday night to Saturday, Sunday night, Sunday, and flip them, then the NBA can figure this out too. The end. I don't know if you like that idea, Mike, but that's what you do.
Yeah, I like the idea of flexing it. I don't like the idea necessarily of locking myself into it has to be East versus East, West versus West. But I do think you could flex games. I mean, look, if I could design the slate that any games that I could see, here's what I would do. Celtics Lakers stays. Traditional rivalry, two good teams. I want to see that. I want to see Sixers Nuggets. I want to see Jokic go against Embiid. Last two guys who battled for the MVP last season, probably the top
Bucks,
two.
Bucks Sixers wouldn't be bad, Mike, right? Bucks Sixers wouldn't be bad.
Bucks better than what they have. Okay. But I'd rather have Sixers Nuggets. I want to see.
Okay.
Remember last year when Embiid ducked Jokic out in Denver, didn't play in that game. I want to see Sixers Nuggets. Give me Bucks Suns. So that's a rematch of the finals from a couple of years ago. You have the Durant Giannis angle from that series between Brooklyn and the Bucks, Durant's toe on the line. I like that one. So now you've taken care of the top three teams in the East. Then I want to see Minnesota and Oklahoma City. Again, that's a game based on this season. It's not a game based on tradition. It's not a game that maybe, I don't know. I mean, you throw the Knicks in a crummy game like the NBA is doing this year. Maybe that gets better ratings than Minnesota, Oklahoma City. But as an NBA fan, I'd rather watch Minnesota and Oklahoma City match up and play against each other.
Put the Minnesota and Oklahoma City game at 8 o'clock.
Like,
yeah, there you go.
I mean, that's the solution. You either put it at noon, or you can't put it at noon because that's like 11 o'clock. There's time. You put it at 8 o'clock. That's the solution. Put it at 8.
All right. I got one more. I got one more game. So one more game. The question then becomes, do I go for a big media market, a traditional franchise, or I think I just want a game that's going to be fun. So maybe make this the late game. People staying up want to see a game that's going to be entertaining, that you're probably going to score.
Great. Both teams are going to score over 150. Indiana, Sacramento?
Yes, absolutely. Indiana, Sacramento. That's my nightcap. Indiana, Sacramento. Just two teams that are going to get up
and down the floor. As soon as you said that, I knew what it was. I knew what it was.
I mean, those two teams are just – you're going to score 100 – each team's going to score 150 points. It's going to be super entertaining. What about Keegan Murray, by the way, the other day, putting up 47?
That was pretty impressive.
It's crazy.
Nine threes, I mean, right? Was that nine threes? Nine threes or something?
12 threes. Yeah, yeah. 12 threes. That's ridiculous.
I think if that's the point, someone needs to guard you. I don't know.
Probably. You might want to guard somebody. You might want to guard a guy who's made 11 threes. You might want to try to make him put it on the floor. But
yeah,
that's neither here nor there. So yeah, I think they could do better than the day of Christmas slate that we have today. Let's put it that way. I'm not super impressed.
Okay, NBA. Welcome flexing. Let's do this. Let's do this, NBA.
Let's do it.
I understand that it probably is arena based, and that's the problem. Like when you think about NFL stadiums, flexing's easier because there's not a lot going on in NFL stadiums in the middle of the NFL season. And it might be a little bit of a – but you just – if you plan it out in advance, you had to figure it out for the NBA in-season tournament. So it's got to be doable for NBA. Figure it out. NBA, do it. Come on, please. And maybe 5 years from now they'll do this, and then I'll be able to say this was my idea. NBA, pay me millions of dollars.
There you go. That'd be good. I would like it. That could be.
I'm going to send this to Commissioner Silver. I'm going to send this to him.
Go for it. You could do it. All right.
Yeah.
Let's see. You just went the last one, right? You went NBA?
Yeah. It was a long tangent, so I apologize.
Okay. I'm going – naughty on the Milwaukee Bucks, Indiana Pacers, Giannis, whatever the dude's name, who scored his first point in the league, and fighting over the ball, and Giannis saying that
it wasn't even the ball
because it wasn't, and then it wasn't even the ball, and he wanted the ball because it was for Dame becoming the fourth.
No, it was for him. He scored 64.
No, I know, but then he said in a press conference he wanted it. He didn't want it for him. He wanted it for Dame because Dame had gotten to be the fourth highest 3-point total in the league history or something. He had some ridiculous thing that he said in the press conference. So that's all just, I mean, I understand everybody's perspective of kind of wanting the ball for your own selfish reason, but that thing quickly spiraled out of control and became ridiculous. So I'm putting those two teams on the naughty list, not something that we have to analyze in great detail, but that was a goofy story that could have been handled in a much more mature way than it was by all parties concerned in that matter. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I don't really have much to say other than that. The whole of them yelling at each other, I just thought that was comical.
It was pretty immature. The whole thing was kind of immature.
Okay, I'm going to put something on the nice list that you're going to laugh at. But I'm going to say The Los Angeles Clippers. They've turned it around a little bit, Mike. This is a current situation. Mike, no. They're on a nice list because this is a current situation. We know that James Harden is going to turn out to the naughty list. He's going to get his fat suit on and maybe dress up as Santa in March and April. Okay. And that's the wrong time of season. There, James Harden, his game the other night, I sent it to you, right? I sent it to you. I saw it.
Yes. You sent it to me. I saw
35 points, 9 assists, 8 of 11,
21 points in like 6 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Like, listen, super impressive. So I'm going to go ahead and say that the current iteration of the Los Angeles Clippers, before anyone's hurt or disgruntled, is on the nice list. Once again, this is current. This is not forever. This is current.
people are on the nice list and then get taken off the nice list and put on the naughty list when they do something inappropriate or wrong. He's always watching, everyone. Santa's always watching. So even with these goofy ears. So what I'm saying to you is this. Currently, the iteration of the Clippers is on their nice list. Will it? And once again, this was against Indiana, who plays zero defense. So I want to be clear here that that's also a contributing factor. However, I'm going to go ahead and put them on the current nice list. But I am free to change that in our next episode in a week from now.
Can you just put them in the same category as Philadelphia and get it over with?
Okay. Yeah.
Nice. Sure. Nice right now in
naughty,
meaningless December regular season games. Naughty list when it matters. Naughty list because you can't trust Kawhi and Paul George to be healthy and be on the floor. And naughty list because James Harden is not going to give you what you want, need, think you're getting in a playoff scenario. It hasn't happened in however many years he's been in the league, 13, 14 years, however long his career has been. And I don't expect that to change at this point. So sure, they've had a nice run and kudos to them for figuring it out. And if Kawhi and Paul George are healthy, there's a chance that that team can do some things because a team with a healthy Kawhi and a healthy Paul George doesn't necessarily need James Harden to come through in the clutch. But the odds of all of the things that need to go right, going right for the Clippers at the right time, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no on that. So I get it. And same way I said with Philly, I think right now you put Philly and the Clippers on the nice list. They're doing some really nice things. But in the long run, I don't know how anybody can look at either one of those teams and tell you with a straight face that they think that those teams have a legitimate chance to win an NBA title. There's no track record of their best players being able to stay healthy. There just isn't. There's not. And you can throw everything you want at me, but it doesn't happen. Like you can say, well, it's due or this is going to, no, it, until it happens, I'm not buying it. And in the history of the league, when you have guys that don't come through, they tend to continue to not come through. And when you have guys that you can count on that are clutch, they continue usually to do that same thing. So a tiger doesn't often change his stripes. And I don't think that these two teams are going to be any different. So,
yeah.
Nice and then naughty.
All right.
My turn?
Yeah, it's your turn, Mike. And I think
right.
I don't know how. Go ahead.
Last one?
I think so. It's okay. Already at almost an hour, so I think.
All right. Now, last one. The Phoenix Suns, I'm putting them on the naughty list because I don't know if we're ever going to see the team that they thought that they were getting when they put Durant, Booker, and Bradley Beal together. Beal comes back for one game, and now he's out again 2 weeks for an ankle injury. I think those guys, I read where they have played 24 minutes together so far. Meanwhile, the Phoenix Suns have played 26 games to this point. And so I've heard a couple of different people say that, well, you can't really evaluate the Phoenix Suns yet because we haven't really seen their team. Well, yeah, I mean, of course we haven't seen their team. The odds that those three guys were going to stay healthy is infinitesimal. And getting them all healthy at the same time, and then when you talk about making a playoff run over the course of 2 months, playing 4 7-game series at playoff level intensity, that all three of those guys are going to be able to stay healthy. And then when you look at the workload that Kevin Durant has been carrying for Phoenix, and he's been healthy, but the dude's 35 years old, and the idea that he's going to continue to be able to play the number of minutes that he's playing and carry the load that he's been carrying, it just doesn't seem like it's sustainable. I mean, Durant's averaging almost 37 minutes a game. And if he's not leading the league, he's right there at the top. And look, they've needed every one of those minutes to get them to 14 and 12 in the 10 seed in the West. And so they spent a lot of money and blew up a lot of their future in order to put these three guys together. And to all the people that keep saying, hey, you can't evaluate them until we see their team, I got news for you. This is their team. It's never going to be intact. It's never going to be complete for any extreme length of time, simply because the injury history of their three best players tells you that at any given moment, any one of those three guys is likely to be unavailable or to be injured. And so I don't know how you can take what they've done to this point and spin it optimistically that they're going to get to where they want to go when they traded for Durant and all the things that they gave up in that trade. I just think right now I got to put Phoenix on the naughty list.
I agree with everything you said. Listen, I picked their over. God bless America. So I'm going to lose that one. Anyways, I wished and hoped that they would, like, listen, the thoughts of what that team could have been were grand. Obviously, they're not going to come true.
Their offense line, could right? be good. Look, if all those guys are on the floor, their offense – offense would be great.
Well, they're on the floor, and then a week later, they're all two of them, three that hurt. Like,
right? That's what I'm saying. You can make the argument that their team's not intact. Well, their team's not intact. That's part of what you get. That was part of the bargain when you put this team together.
Yep. All right, Mike. I said we've said a lot tonight. I think we said a lot. Right?
I agree. You
agree?
Covered a lot of different things. Covered a lot of different teams and a lot of different individuals, a lot of different storylines. Yeah, jumped around.
All right. Well, we have to finish now with we got to finish now with a little Browns talk for
all right.
Listen,
lay it on me, man.
I'm gonna put the Chicago Bears on the nice list because they didn't catch that damn Hail Mary at the end of the game. There we go. Listen, here's what I'm gonna say. The Browns did it. On that play, they did what they should have done. You're taught to swat it down. You're not supposed to swat it out and down, but they did swat it down. Okay, the fact that guy didn't catch the ball, I still can't believe it. I don't think Kevin Stefanski can believe it. I don't know if the NFL films. You know, they have the NFL films crew and they do this stuff. There was a video floating around on Twitter today. I don't know if you saw it, but of Kevin Stefanski, and he looked like his soul left his body for a second. And then he just got so excited. And listen, the bottom line is this. The really nice thing about Joe Flacco, he has nothing to prove, okay? He's playing with house money. He's not a young guy who's just out there trying to make a living. He's, 37, 36, 37, 38? I don't remember how old he is. And if he makes those interceptions, he's going to be like, I don't care. I'm just going to keep throwing the ball. I know I can do it. I'm going to try to do it. Listen, the first pick, I think it was the receiver's fault. Flacco didn't throw the receiver under the bus post game, but based on what Stefanski said in one of his pressers, it sounded like someone ran the wrong route. The second pick, Flacco needs to do a better job of not leaving this guy out to trip, but that guy needs to catch the ball. And it was the same guy, by the way, who ran the first route. The Njoku pick in the end zone situation, that was a bad interception. That was really bad. But the throw he had to Cooper, the throw he had to Njoku for a touchdown, the throw he had to Elijah Moore, like, if anyone says that this team is not better with Flacco at quarterback than Deshaun Watson, DTR, I don't know, anyone else that we've had, like, Flacco is easily, and I am in a Baker stand. And by the way, Baker had the greatest game. You saw that, right, Mike? The greatest game a quarterback has ever had in Lambeau Field. So shout out to Baker. I'm a Baker stan. I got it. All right? We know that. But Flacco is the best quarterback that we've ever had for the Cleveland Browns since 99, right? Like Derek Anderson, maybe that one season. You can make the argument, but I just feel like anytime Flacco steps back there,
I have confidence he's going to make the right decision. Even if he doesn't make the right decision, he's the only quarterback I've ever felt this way. And I don't know. Maybe it's because he's actually won a Super Bowl. But I just remember, I'm going flashbacks. Let's hear a quick flashback. When Jeff Garcia was our quarterback, I was like, oh, this guy, he was so good in San Francisco. He's going to be great. And he was terrible. Okay. Like, honestly, can you remember a Browns quarterback? Like, have you? I know that the first half he regressed a little bit. And then the second half, and once again, he could totally have a terrible game against Houston on Sunday. And then we'd be like, oh, what was that guy talking about on the podcast? But like, I felt more confidence than I felt in the last, I don't know, at least the last 6 years with anyone at quarterback, with Flacco back there. And it's been three games. I don't know how you feel, but couple that with the defense. It's just like this defense, everyone keeps getting hurt. I can't pronounce his name, but J.O.K. I'm just going to say J.O.K. I'm like Mark Sanchez and the butt fumble man. I'm just going to say his name, J.O.K., because he clearly can't pronounce his name, even though he's a professional broadcaster. He had his great. I think I texted my dad because my dad didn't watch the game. I thought the game that J.O.K. played on Sunday was probably the best game that he's ever played in his career. He was everywhere, all over the place. Myles Garrett didn't show up on the stat sheet a lot, but they were like double and triple teaming him the whole game. And by the way, there's a good compilation. Did you see the video of him getting held?
That. Yeah, I saw that.
Like,
Like,
he got held so many times. And the NFL, he called them out last week. The NFL official's like, I'm not going to call holding on him. He literally got face mask held and they didn't call it. Listen, if this defense, Joe Flacco steady in progress, I think there's playoffs, in my opinion, are no doubt. It doesn't sound like CJ Stroud is playing on Sunday. If Case Keenum is your quarterback that you're going against, okay, listen, you got to win that game. And then the following week they play the Jets. Listen, they're not in. It's going to be the projected temperature for that Thursday night football game is going to be like 15 degrees wind chill, Mike. Right now, I know we're 10 days out, or what is it? No, what is it? It's we're 10 days out. But the projected wind chill for next Thursday's game is like 15 degrees in Cleveland with our defense. Give me a break. Give me a break, Jets. You're losing that game. And then you're going to get to the Cincinnati game. I'm talking myself into 3-0, baby. Let's go. Super Bowl. Cash my bet. Super Bowl. I'm just kidding. Anyways, honestly, I think the Browns, if they don't make the playoffs, Mike, if they don't make the playoffs, I'm going to say this. The Cleveland Browns do not make the playoffs. I will buy you and your family a large pizza dinner. I know we have a pizza bet. I don't remember. What was our pizza bet on? Was it on our wins thing?
The wins and losses, yeah.
Okay, if the Browns don't make the playoffs, I'm gonna get you pizza. All right, done. All right. And you don't have to reciprocate if they do make the playoffs, because I don't think there's any chance that they're going to miss the playoffs at this point. There's no way.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mike. Sorry. All right.
I don't even know where to start. I'm glad you're confident in Mr. Flacco. I'm glad you feel that he's the best quarterback we've had since Otto Graham. But
no, that's not what I said. I said the best quarterback since we came back in 99, Mike. Name a quarterback that you had more confidence in since 99. Yeah,
that's PJ Walker.
Get out of here.
Look,
Dustin Flacco's York.
Dustin York, MVP. Flacco has been fine. I mean, at times he's been a lot worse than fine. At times he's been better than fine, but he's been fine. I don't like my chances in a big game when my quarterback cannot run for a first down. So I don't.
But did you
like
see? Wait. Before you, can I? Well, I know you can't run for a first down, but do you see the adjustments Stefanski made in the second half, like rolling him out more, like.
Yeah, look, he can move in the pocket. There's no doubt he can move and step around. And in a way, that's good, right? Because he's not just taking off all the time.
And he's 6'6", so he's 6'6".
I just know how demoralizing it is when you do everything right as a defense and then the quarterback runs for 8 yards and gets you a first down. And the fact that you take that away with Flacco, I don't love that. Now, look, I think the one positive is that he is a guy who's been around. He's a guy who has experience. He's probably a guy who's not going to get flustered in big situations. So he's been fine. I've been saying it all season that if this team gets average quarterback play, that they should win a lot of games. And I think Flacco has provided them with, to this point, average quarterback play, maybe slightly above average at times. I don't know that I'm super confident that week in and week out, Joe Flacco is just going to go back and throw the Cleveland Browns to victory, but he's fine. He's fine. I'm okay with it. The defense, when you look at what they did against the Bears, where if you take away, obviously, the pick six and you take away the other turnover, the defense just completely dominated that game again. I think the Browns, as you said, in any bad weather game, the Browns are going to have a huge advantage because their defense just is going to make it really, really difficult for another team to score. Now, we haven't gotten nearly as many turnovers, I think, as you would like to get. That's the one thing that I don't think they've done a tremendous job at. But I think they made it really hard to score. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we said, okay, look at all these teams. Who's going to score 20 against the Browns? And look, it's really hard to get to 20 points against the Browns, especially if the weather's going to be bad. So I agree with you. If this team should definitely make the playoffs, if they don't, they should be ashamed of themselves. And man,
Can I add one thing to that defense thing? Yeah. I saw an interesting tweet this today that I did save to this. And I haven't sent it to my dad because I forgot to send it to him, and now I know how late it is, and he's I don't want to wake him up because my dad leaves his ring on, Mike. Like,
there you go.
Fail. Anyways, coverage success rates for cornerbacks in the NFL. The Browns have three of the top five corners in NFL this year. Martin Emerson, coverage success rate, 67.7%. Denzel Ward and Greg Newsome are tied for second with 66.7% coverage rate. Now, coverage rate success is measured by NFL Next Gen Stats. And it's like based on targets, the percentage of them that are completed. And the minimum targets is 40. So it's not like it can be some exasperated, like someone who's had like 10 coverages or whatever. So we have three of the top three of the top four corners in the NFL. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it all plays together, right? Like, your corners are only as good as your pass rush. Your pass rush is only as good as your corners. And I think when you put pressure on the quarterback, it makes everything else in your defense work better. And that's where it begins and ends with the Browns, is the fact that they can get pressure on the quarterback consistently. And when you do that, you just – make the quarterback more inaccurate, which makes passes in the secondary easier to defend. And the defense, look, the defense is really good. This team should, by all means, probably win all three of these remaining games. Even if they can't surpass the Ravens or they can't get to a higher seed and they end up in the fifth seed, it's not a bad place to be because you're going to play the champion of the AFC South, which is going to be the Jaguars probably, or the
Colts.
And if
we beat the Texans, we will have swept the AFC South.
Right. We've already beaten both of those teams. Now, it's not to say that any win is a guaranteed win, but you'd like our chances in either one of those games. And so it feels like the things that normally go wrong for the Browns in some way, shape, or form have gone right a lot of times this season.
Yeah.
And the fact that this team's continued to fight despite all the crazy amount of injuries is pretty incredible. So should be a fun next 3 weeks for the Browns without question. So
we're going to keep the hope alive, Mike.
Keep hope alive.
Okay. And then I don't know what our plan is for next week, Mike. Are we planning on doing on the 26th next Tuesday?
That's what I would say. We just do it on Tuesday. It seems like a day that probably will work. So,
all right, so we'll be back on Tuesday to recap the wonderful Christmas slate of games. I'm going to talk about the Browns and preview the Browns game on Thursday. This will be fun. So there you go, Mike.
Sounds like a plan. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us on the Naughty and Nice Christmas episode. And we will catch you. I was going to say catch you in the new year, but not quite yet. We'll catch you next week on December the 26th when you'll be listening on the 27th. So thanks to everyone for listening tonight.
We'll see,
and we'll catch
see who's
you
got
on our next
stockings next week.
There you go. That's it. We'll catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.